shalom to all of our snowbird friends. Shalom to Gideon and Asa and Jolie down in Austin, Texas. Shalom to Howard and Elise in West Palm Beach. Shalom to everyone of the Leibovitzim in Tel Aviv. But we are stuck here in the deep north where it has recently snowed. So there may be swearing this week. So that is your obscenity warning. Don't you bite your children? Don't you nibble on your children?
Is that not your thing? Did, but then
they started biting you.
No, there was like a biting outbreak in school. Uh-huh. My 2-year-old, she bit someone in school, and they told her, "Yael, we do not bite our friends."
She
and
said, she goes, "Mommy does.
Luke isn't my friend."
Hello, J. Crew. This is Unorthodox, the world's leading Jewish podcast. I am your host, Mark Oppenheimer, wearing a red V-neck sweater bought on credit card points from L.L. Bean Visa.
Dadhood. Wow. Maximum dadhood achieved.
Peak dadhood achieved.
Congratulations.
Thank
Living
you.
Your best life.
I can retire now. I'm joined this week by Tablet Deputy Editor Stephanie Butnick.
Hello. I'm also living my truth. I'm wearing a cashmere sweater that says Juicy on it. And if you must know, I got mine at Bloomingdale's Friends and Family.
What is Friends and Family?
Oh, it's like when everything at Bloomingdale's is on sale.
Ooh. And Liel Leibowitz, Tablets, what are you, senior writer?
I'm a let you finish, co-hosts, but I'm rocking the best t-shirt of all time.
Of all time.
What does it say, Mark?
It says,
Demogorgon.
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 What is this reference from?
It's
I know you say it a lot.
Obviously from Stranger Things.
Season 1 or 2?
Both.
That's like as mainstream as you get, I feel like.
I think so.
Did you watch Stranger Things, Stephanie?
No, too scary.
I got 5 episodes in, I got till we met the bald girl.
Oh, no spoilers.
There's a bald girl. There you go. Our Jew of the Week this week is attorney, writer, and non-Orthodox mother of 6, Jordana Horn Gordon.
I'm glad she's back.
She is back. And she's going to be in studio this week. And our Gentile of the Week is Reza Aslan, former evangelical, former Muslim, now just famous best-selling author of books about God, Jesus, life, eternity. He's also... Our guests this week, I will say, are very good looking.
I'm excited.
We have an attractive, they're not just smart.
Look, Rez is on the phone, so we won't get the full like thing, yeah. But we'll try to imagine it.
Rez is, he's got that silvering going in his hair.
Are you guys on a Rez basis?
I met him once. I met him.
So yes.
And you know, yeah, he's Rez now. I don't know if he goes by Rez. So what's up? Is there any news?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, Liel.
There is.
Okay.
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 Saturday morning, it's snowing in New York City. And I take the children to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, mm-hmm. which, you know.
Oh, you classy.
One does.
Right.
And we walk into the elevator and someone asks, well, excuse me, do you know where the Rodin exhibit is? And the elevator is very crowded. So I'm sort of, you know, spacing out, like looking at the kids. And then someone else says, I don't, but maybe the British gentleman does. And I think that sounds really curious. Is there a British gentleman in this elevator I should be aware of? And so I look up and everyone's looking at me. I was the British gentleman because while every other day of the year I dress like a homeless person on a budget, that particular day I wore just my normal, you know, outerwear, which includes hunter rubber, you know, galoshes, hunting boots, the barber jacket,
yes.
My scarf. And a sort of like tweed cap. And I was like, oh my God, I am.
So what do?
Do
you respond
in a moment of
the
transformation.
Queen's English?
I was like, oh, cheerio. Yeah, tit-tit and all that. I believe it's on the second floor.
In your grouse hunting attire.
Moment of absolute transcendence.
Were your children so proud? They were like, Papa.
Yeah. Papa.
Papa.
Might I have a biscuit? We're late for tea with the Queen.
I thought this was going to end with them being like, ask the big Jew in the corner. I was going to be like, not the Met.
British drag.
I should have gone like, yeah, you guys should go to the second floor. Like, the thickest.
That is amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah.
You passed.
I passed.
Mazel
I passed as British. I don't drink coffee. I take tea, my dear. I like my toast on one side. In my accent when I talk, I'm an Englishman in New York.
I want to talk about what we undertook for the first time. A little bit of a,
yes.
A little gift-given exchange.
Yeah.
A secret.
An unsecret Santa.
Santawitz.
It's a Hanukkah Harry, as they say.
Uh-huh.
You know, like
that's like a secret
literally
Santa.
The poor man's stand-in for Santa.
Right.
substitute.
We decided the other night when we were having our conference call that we would celebrate Hanukkah. Wait, it starts tonight.
We decided that we would celebrate.
Stop there. No, that we would give each other gifts, that we would each get a gift for each. It would not be a round robin secret thing. It would be we'd each buy two gifts. And I proceeded to not have time yesterday. And there were two doctor's appointments, including one at which I learned I have shrunk. That's my news, by the way. I'm going to interject that news.
Oh my God, I thought shrunk was like a disease named after. Like,
no, I do not have the disease known as shrunk.
I have the shrunk.
I have shrunk.
Oh my God.
I used to be 5'7¾". I mean, I was never 5'8". I'm the first to say it, but I was kissing 5'8". I was glancing. I was brushing the cheek of 5'8". And yesterday I got on that, you know, that scale where like they lower the thing on your head and then you get off and you see truth. And the truth is I'm barely 5'7½". I mean, I've lost a full quarter inch in the past several years since I was last at the doctor's.
Oh, wow.
I'm 43 years old and I am shrinking. So to my younger brothers, I will meet you down there soon. I'm going to shrink below you. I'm pretty soon going to, dad, because I'm the tallest Oppenheimer. In like going out to first cousins, grandparents, parents, like, but not
wow.
soon. I'm going to.
This is the title
descend.
Of a novel I want to write one day. The tallest Oppenheimer.
But not for long because I am.
So all
freaking
this is to say,
shrinking.
This is just an excuse to say you didn't buy us presents.
So I did not buy you presents.
Okay. Well, I got.
I'm sorry.
Let's. Who wants? I want to start.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So here, Mark, this gift is for you.
Oh, Stephanie.
It runs on a theme that we've been discussing for the past like year and a half.
It's movie.
It's microwave popcorn.
It's Paul Newman's buttered 100% profit charity.
Oh my God.
Newman's own microwave popcorn.
So basically, and then I pre-wrapped tiny snacks for you to sneak into the movie theater. So while you don't pay for movies, it's like, it's red. What are those things called? What are those things?
Sour patches.
No, sour straws. No, they're the thick
straws. The ribbons
sour
of
belts.
Sourness.
They're sour belts in tiny little Ziploc baggies, okay. Which will, and then there's Swedish fish in there, and then there's popcorn.
And so, Mark, to go with your brand oh, new God. Popcorn set, may I present you with an AMC movie gift
Leo
card.
Leo got me a movie gift card. Now, we promised not to spend more than $10. So is this is like one ticket? You went $12?
Well, it's one New York ticket, which is probably seven tickets.
Thank you guys. I love you guys.
Okay.
That's the best.
So actually, Mark is the only person who gets two presents.
Sorry, guys.
Okay, Leo, I'm going to get yours. I stayed within the $10 limit, but I wanted to get you something that I think might help you out.
This is amazing.
A Metro card.
This is an object I have not held in my hands.
It allows you to get on the subway.
In 15 years.
Which is a Metro card.
Leo, have you seen one of those before? It wasn't a Metro card when
I
you were last on
I saw the Pelham of taking 1, 2, 3. Then those. Oh, no, those probably had tokens.
I hope you use it, you know, well. This Don't use it all in one place.
Use,
the subway.
Use it in good health. So, Stephanie, to keep up with your fashion game, which is very strong,
oh, thank you.
I had to buy the most fashionable Hanukkah themed item that I could, and I found these lovely dreidel pants.
Oh my God, they're dreidel leggings! I've seen these on the internet,
which may or may not fit because I believe they're for children. But you know,
wait,
then again,
they're draggings.
Oh, they're draggings.
They're draggings.
I will make these fit.
Leo, those won't fit my daughter.
These
those
are
so
the
small.
Only freaking size
Guys,
they had,
these
man.
Are child's
so
large.
Don't,
I'm gonna. They're
don't
black leggings.
Criticize
with,
me.
You may have to turn them
like
into a head wrap.
Purple dreidels.
You
these
could
are
always
amazing.
Use those as
I
a scarf.
I could fit into.
There will be photos on the Facebook page. Let's just say
this is amazing.
Exactly right.
This is amazing. It also works as a headscarf. You guys, this was fun.
This was fun.
Mark,
guys,
thank you so
presents.
Much for all your gifts.
Here's the good news. The good news is the season will keep going because next time we tape, I will have gifts
and
for you.
Guys, I did get Mark's wedding gift. So thank you for the two hand towels.
Was it hand towels?
It was two hand towels.
Mark doesn't even know.
Well, there wasn't a lot left. I don't even know.
But yeah, so I use those in good health.
I owe a lot of gifts. Our listener, Jerry Yitzi Sandberg, sent in a joke on the Facebook page that I think we all should hear in this holiday season. A woman goes to the post office to buy stamps for her Hanukkah cards. She says to the clerk, "May I have 50 Hanukkah stamps, please?" "What denomination?" says the clerk. The woman says, "Oy vey, my God, has it come to this? Okay, give me 6 Orthodox, 12 Conservative, and 32 Reform." Oh, Yitzi Sandberg,
Yitzi,
new
you know
member
us so
of the
well.
Facebook group. News of the Jews. All right. So some little quick hits. One of Us, the movie about leaving ultra-Orthodox communities, is up for an Oscar for Best Documentary.
Wow.
Mazel tov to the people who made that movie. Go listen to the show where we interviewed Lonnie Santo to hear more about that story. Soon by You is back for new episodes. Soon by You.
Yeah, the crew on that from that show was on our show a few months ago, and they haven't had a new episode since. And this is the wedding episode, so
and
I'm
is
excited.
This Amazon Prime, is this?
This is YouTube.
This is YouTube.
This is pre-Amazon Prime.
Yeah. Got it. Pre-preme. Orthodox singer tapes his eyes to avoid looking at women. Orthodox singer-songwriter Yonatan Raisel a couple weeks ago was giving a concert in Israel, and he was seen with black tape stuck across his eyes as he was singing and playing at the keyboard, presumably so he would not have to see women dancing.
So this was a concert played to a mixed crowd where there were
yes.
women dancing.
So he knew what he was getting
and
into.
And he wasn't saying there are no women coming.
He
or
was
like,
fine with the women, but then the women, you know.
Oh, they started
they
dancing.
They started dancing. Those immodest slatterns got up from their chairs and started. Could you believe this?
Dancing
some
at
women,
a concert.
They started dancing at a concert.
So did he?
So then he just like those, grabbed tape and taped his eyeballs.
Well, I think he has a guy like that has black tape in a hip holster, and he just like and just whipped out it like dispenses in the perfect length, slices it off, puts it on his eyes on one.
It's
again,
very like I'm not thing. Mad. I'm just disappointed. I'm going right. to tape my eyes shut.
Look what you've made me do.
It's like what Taylor Swift was talking about in that song.
It's a perfect model for how to deal with these things in Israel. Like, you don't want to see people driving on Shabbos, tape your eyes. Yeah. You don't want to hear it, stuff in your ears. You do you. Like, it. Stop telling us to
I just had a vision of someone
you.
Driving on Shabbos, taping their eyes shut. So that's definitely going to work well.
That would only improve the quality of some Israelis driving, because let me tell you.
If you want to experience Yonatan Raisel for yourself, just stow away after your birthright trip, which you can now take up to the age of 32. News of the Jews, birthright.
This is big.
Birthright, which used to be for Jews ages 18 to 26. Now it can be 18 to 32. So for those of you ages 26 to 32 who thought you were out of the window for your free trip to Israel, you're not.
Instead of Bedouin tent night, we now have colonoscopy night.
That's right. Like, pretty soon, like, your bubby will be eligible for a free.
I think.
No, by the way, that would be like a
bubby
rowdy bubby birthright.
That's a bus.
That's a show.
I would. Yeah, we could do that.
Those guys are hooking up left and right.
So a friend who was on Birthright with me sent this link, a link to this news story, and with the clip from Lost that says we have to go back.
By the way, wouldn't it be kind of disturbing? Because isn't, like, seriously, I've never obviously been on Birthright, but isn't, like, the whole point, like, hooking up with Israeli soldiers?
That's be
like,
slightly exaggerated.
Hi, I'm Josh. I'm 38 years old. Do you want to make out? It's like, no, you're my dad's age. Like, that's disgusting.
That is, I think, slightly exaggerated.
Slightly.
Like, there was some hooking up on my trip, not by me, but there were a couple of, I was a grad student. There were a couple of the undergrads who did, I think they had a thing, and it lasted, I think, a couple months after we got back.
With each other or with the Israeli soldiers?
No, with each other. But nobody was hooking up with the tour guide or the Israeli soldiers. That's
really?
That, really. They were just guarding us.
Guys.
Yeah.
Speak for yourselves. I went on Birthright.
Slow clap here.
I have to say, professionally, we embedded a bunch of journalists embedded on the trip through tablet, and I did make out with a soldier on my trip. I made it my mission.
Did
journalistically?
You really?
Yes, and right before he said, "This is not for the blog."
Did you know this, Leo?
Excuse me.
It's
but
my proudest moment.
National security concerns require that you never write about what is going to go on.
Because we went and we were like, Birthright by day, bloggers by night. We'd like sit outside our cabins and just like furiously blog about what had happened. It was
insane. I joined Tablet too late. This
you
was
did.
Right before I got to Tablet.
I also don't think you would have qualified then before they increased
the
age.
Yeah, no, I definitely would.
You do now.
The
new deal
there.
Is that you pay for some of your expenses on your LL Bean credit card points that you've
your
accumulated
LL Bean
for your
credit
children.
Card.
Basically, you can keep going Birthright until you start shrinking. And that's at right. that point, once you start getting shorter, you're out of the game.
You must be this tall. To ride the bus.
Tall enough to ride.
Holocaust survivor beauty pageant. We have written before about the... how is
this
different?
A different pageant.
How is this different from the last story that we did about the Holocaust survivor beauty pageant?
It's possible it's the same pageant in a different year, but this is this one is sponsored by the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, which I don't think the last one was.
Oh, why do they keep putting Holocaust survivors on the catwalk? Seven elderly Holocaust survivors have taken to the catwalk in the Israeli desert city of Arad to raise money for a charity operating in the country. Four of the seven survivors on Tuesday night were from the former Soviet Union, including Ukrainian-born Elizabeth Rodich, whose seamstress mother taught her how to make clothes. And then it goes on and on about how her mother taught them to make clothing from frayed fabric, how it got her excited about fashion. And now here she is walking the catwalk for the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, which helps elderly Israelis pay for food, medicine, and fuel.
If they want to do this and they're comfortable doing this, more power to them.
Agreed.
You go, girl.
If only there was a song about Holocaust beauty pageants that we could play right now.
Think of the horror people do unto each other. Think of man's search for meaning as he dies. Think of everything you've lost and can't recover, but know why. Your Holocaust survivor, beauty pageant, cutie pie.
That was from Jim Nabel, the Jubadors' song, Holocaust, what was it called? Holocaust beauty pageant?
Holocaust beauty, survivor,
cutie
beauty,
pie. Cutie,
Holocaust survivor, beauty pageant, cutie pie?
Yeah.
That was from...
Manic Pixie Holocaust Survivor Beauty Pie.
I should find out what it's called.
Beauty Pie.
That'd be really funny if that was the new Hollywood standard. She's manic and pixie-ish, but sometimes she wakes up screaming in the middle of the night remembering Treblinka.
Yeah, Holocaust Survivor, Beauty Pageant, Cutie Pie. A little more Nabel coming up in this show. Next up in News of the Jews, it's been a great week. Roy Moore's wife defended against the charge that they were anti-Semitic. I guess he had said something about how George Soros didn't know God and was an agent of the devil, and people interpreted this as anti-Semitism. Why? I can't imagine. And she got up to say...
Fake news would tell you that we don't care for Jews. I tell you all this because I've seen it all, so I just want to set the record straight while they're here.
The media? While the media is here?
One of our attorneys is a Jew. We have very close friends that are Jewish and rabbis, and we also fellowship with them.
Now, I don't know why they said we're not friends with the Jews. Well, just the other day, that lovely Shoshana Cohen went and saw my Roy in his studio for about an hour with the door locked. Now, she's 12, but she's very curious about politics. Roy loves the Jews.
They're like, some of my best attorneys are Jewish.
Some newsletter subscribers. This week, we welcome the law firm, a tiny but elite law firm, of Dr. Kendra Livingston, a Jewess, despite the name.
Despite the Kendra
despite
and the Livingston.
The Kendra and the Livingston.
But not the doctor.
But not the doctor.
Benjamin Wolf and Zoe Plotsky. Zoe Plotsky. She is from the family after whom the word plots was named. Now, this is actually a great moment for me to say I've never understood what plots means. There are always there were like bad local ads where someone would say, the prices were so cheap, I plotzed. And I never knew what that meant.
The plots.
What
thickens.
Does it mean to plotz?
I feel like it's like to be overwhelmed with emotion.
Is that what
plotzing,
it is?
But it's not like, I'm not verklempt. Like there's specifics. I mean, we probably should get an expert here to discuss like, this.
On a 0 to verklempt scale.
On a 0 to verbringen.
A plotz is like a 7.
Anyway, Zoe.
Or plotzing is like, there's also frustration involved, I feel like, with plots. I'm plotzing. It's not like I'm cavelling.
You're not schwitzing yet, but you're getting there.
So according to my online dictionary, the first one to pop, it's North American. Apparently it's informal. And it means to collapse or be beside oneself with frustration, annoyance, or strong emotion. The example they give, this is wonderful, like crypto-Jewish slur. The example they give is, quote, lots of directors plots while making their films.
What is that even? That's not even a helpful sentence. Lots right. of directors eat that's while right. making their films.
Right. Anyway,
and
Zoe,
if we're talking about today, we can talk about other things directors are doing.
Zoe Plotsky.
Is it 2018 yet?
Is it 2018 yet?
Yeah, because it's going to be so much better.
So much better. Zoe Plotsky is from the family that originally, her ancestors were the first. They were beside
themselves
so much that their family name became a verb, which was to plots. The newsletter is not the regular tablet newsletter.
It is not.
To get this newsletter, Sign up on the bottom of one of our show pages at tabletmag.com/unorthodox.
It has none of the grace or the depth or the urgency.
None of it. Or send an email.
Like editorial vision.
Or send an email asking for it to unorthodox@tabletmag.com. Be forewarned, we may make fun of your name. While you are at it, not while, but while, please rate us on iTunes and share us on Facebook. Join our Facebook group, in fact. The best thing you can do to help keep us going is to help generate new listeners. Generate them spontaneously, grow them in your garden, or just sign your friends up for stuff. Steal their phones and sign us up for, you know, just go on their podcast app. And you will keep us strong and thriving. There will be strength going into 2018.
Hey fam, this week, Jordana Horn Gordon joins us once again. She's a lawyer, writer, mother of six, and self-declared karaoke superstar. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
And
I'm
we have
so
you
happy
here in
here.
Person, which is really exciting for us.
It's much more exciting for me.
Thank you for letting me.
And so obviously the first question is, go to karaoke song?
I try to spice it up sometimes. I try to go for the unexpected. I try to deviate from the
meatloaf
standard. Right, exactly.
Journey.
The
journey.
Right. Whitney. You know me so well. It's weird. But I would say generally I do a Pat Benatar
nice.
Default.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Stephanie? Interesting.
I don't do karaoke.
Oh.
Not in a snobby way. Just not.
Mark, I know you do karaoke.
I do karaoke. I mean, I've done it. I'm always eager to do it.
You seem like someone who would really
I've
take to it.
I've done it only three or four times in my life. I love it. I did a strong performance at the Holohan karaoke party 4 or 5 years ago, and I don't remember what the song was.
You were a bunch
was that
of,
good?
I'm sorry. Liel, but you have an you want us to say
yes.
Liel.
Right.
Well, no, I have two kind of, you know, nodes. See You Again by Miley Cyrus
yeah,
is
classic.
Absolutely the kind of, you know, the pièce de résistance. Then I figured out, and this will surprise exactly no one, like really kind of borderline racist, xenophobic country songs, like anything by Toby Keith, I kind of do really well. We'll put
shocking.
A Buddha in your ass. It's the American way. You know, like, it's great. I could really rock that.
I want to back up for a second and say that before Jordana was a famous writer on parenting for Kvaler, before even you were Jerusalem Post woman in New York or in New Jersey, I guess, she was somebody who my friend John Pitt said, you've got to, one of the most interesting people I knew in college was Jordana Horn. You've got to get to know her. She's amazing. And over the years, we've probably emailed thousands of times. And
correct.
I've never met her
correct.
Before today.
And here you are.
The other interesting thing about her is I'm that rarity for being a conservative Jew, non-Orthodox Jew with four kids. And she used to be that. And then she had two more. I think there's no one in the conservative movement with as many kids as you have. And have you ever, do you know, I actually think, I mean, I don't want to downgrade the law degree.
By the way,
the
you get to lead the movement.
But they might have, right, they might be out there, but they might have plummeted into insanity, which is right. totally possible.
But I'm totally serious. Like, I think that in a movement that has probably, like, the average family size is 1.3 kids per couple, there is no conservative Jewish woman with as many children. Like, I would love for our listeners to say, not that that honorific means anything, but because birth rate is,
Listen, with all due respect, any idiot could get a freaking law degree. Six
so
children?
True.
Like, yeah. I have two, and I am barely functioning this morning.
Stephanie's okay. cat six? Drives her over
yeah,
the
Yeah, my
fence.
Cat. No, but so, six kids. Eight nights of Hanukkah. It
nightmare.
Starts. We're recording this on Tuesday. Hanukkah starts tonight. What is
guide
it like?
Us.
And I have right. to say, you're in Short Hills. Like you're not in a place. You're where,
right, right.
You're in a place where I imagine presents are important.
I was saying, what does that mean for someone who doesn't know Jewish geography
to
of New
me,
Jersey?
It's part of the like tri-state area where people are. There are wealthy kids around, and
right. It is a place that is known since the days of Goodbye Columbus and Philip Roth for being an over the top. You know, right. I think in Goodbye Columbus, sporting goods fell from the trees in the yard in endless bounty. And so, yes, it is very much an over the top place. In fact, my 6 year old daughter made sure that she cornered me in the kitchen yesterday and said, you know, I will not name her friend who said this, but my friend tells me that in her house they celebrate 12 nights of Hanukkah.
That is
and I said, well, that is a miracle.
Whoa.
That's impressive. So I said, well, here, you know, we're just garden variety eight. And generally, I would say that we err on the side of, for lack of a better term, stocking stuffer kinds of nights, for example.
I've never heard of such a thing.
Well, I would say a couple years ago, I think my low that that got me, you know, the head shake from my husband was when I distributed empty Pez dispensers and tried to market
and the
them
next
as,
night,
as
the Pez
toys
were coming?
In and of themselves. No. The Pez never came. So that was a low point. So now I try to keep it comparatively low key. There is,
but there's a strategy, right? I mean, or is there none? Like, is there day one the big gift, and then by day six,
like my
no,
family,
you can't start with a big gift. That's that's setting yourself up with that's setting yourself up for just heart. Like, what is this? So we start. You start small, and then there's a gradual crescendo, and then the resolution. So toward the final night, we have
just
you
like
know
life.
The family. Correct. The book exchange, you know, everyone's got a monetary cap. You know, somebody's getting a board book. It's.
I love that they're giving each other gifts as well.
I think that's important.
Interesting.
That it's not actually just about you.
We
that's
don't
sort,
do that.
That's sort of the theme of our it's
parenting
not about
fail.
You.
Well, Shay
I got to run that. Home now. Be like, yo, kids.
So what? Wait.
I want to say we did a gift exchange here today, but only two of us brought gifts.
Yeah, I forgot to bring gifts. How do you? So what's the protocol there? How do you take each of them shopping for?
Well, so we have the conversation of I don't necessarily take each of them shopping. Because I also find, as I'm sure you know, that taking a child into a store is just unleashing horror upon yourself. So I say, what do you think? What do you think she would like? What are things? And they say, oh, well, you know, she's seen this commercial and she seemed to really get excited about this. Sometimes
she's
they
commercial.
Spin it like she really
would like
likes
an Audi.
This. Right. Exactly. There was a Lexus with a bow on the top of it. Right. And she seemed really excited by that.
Stephanie's wearing a very beautiful cashmere Juicy sweater. So, you
it's
know,
back,
if they
baby.
If they need any
that
ideas.
Is nice. Right. Exactly. Right. I mean, you know, we're pre-literate, so it could say really anything. So, but. Keeping it low key is my biggest advice. You know, they have there are things that they get excited, especially when they're young. They get excited about such dumb things right. that you can really milk that for all it's worth. Like they have those you know those sequin things where you rub it one way.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one color and you rub it. So I found a thing where like you can get one of those that wraps around your wrist, so you can just sit there all day.
It's like the next
rubbing
fidget
back
spinner.
And forth.
Is it a slap bracelet? Anna's really into the slappy.
No,
the,
but it does
she's
have
a Superman bracelet.
There's
that's
a
slappy.
Wallet component
oh, wow.
to it. I mean, not that you have anything to put in the wallet, but I'm just saying, you know, you could sit there all day just rubbing your
I
wrist.
Like that. And by the way, slap bracelets were banned from like my elementary school. So
why? Just because they were so annoying?
I think it was like a suburban legend that someone somewhere had broken their wrist with a slap
Come
bracelet.
Come on.
That was, I mean, look, these were like the late 90s. These were, these were the early 90s. Things are crazy.
I do put a little thought in it, and I make sort of mental bookmarks. For example, lately the little girls have taken to, there's one closet in one girl's room that they've decided is their clubhouse. They put up a sign that says Clubhouse, which I thought was adorable. And so I was in Costco, which is, of course, where we shop for food because we go through that in a week. But, and they had... I wouldn't call them necessarily Christmas lights. They were
celebratory holiday lights.
Celebratory holiday for the festival
lights.
Of lights. They could put in their clubhouse. These lights, and I thought, well, that would be a fun
fantastic
kickoff to the festival
two,
of lights.
Two birds with one stone.
100%.
You recently said to me that much as you love your children and your life, sometimes you think, "What am I doing as this super educated woman in 2017 when the world could use me?" Outside of Costco, is that how you put it? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but
right.
How
so,
do you, how
so
do you...
I think what I said there are definitely moments where I do feel you know I don't know I haven't had the there was something that went viral that was a situation with we don't have a dog thank God but a dog and a poop and a Roomba and they were like oh what has become of my life but that feeling of you know. I'm really extremely educated and, you know, there was a time even just a few years ago when I was following and reporting on Hillary and Bibi, you know. So I do have ideas that go beyond.
So you're saying that you have great training for like total toddler like irrational behavior.
100%. Yes. And a peace process that moves nowhere. That's yes. Right.
But having the same conversation right. every night. I told you.
100%. 100%. Intractability is something of a specialty. But I think that. Yes, there's an incongruity because, and certainly in my town where, you know, you're the value of the college sticker that will go on the back of your car is extremely high. This idea of, you know, I joked around with my son saying like, well, you know, I can't get too fussed about where you're going to go to college because, I mean, you know, like... I worked my ass off and like, look at me.
I just got knocked up a lot.
Right. And he's like, so you're positioning yourself as a sort of cautionary tale. And I'm like, well, not necessarily, but I mean, in other words, right. The idea of, well, why aren't you taking this education and using it in a quote unquote, and the implication, whether spoken or unspoken, is in a better way than
than raising
being
humans.
With your children.
Yeah. Or right. that being with your children doesn't require that. Or it's you're not using it in that sense, right?
Correct.
Isn't there sort of a condescension there?
100%, yes.
Do you get this from other people or is this something you sometimes put
it's
on yourself?
Definitely internal. Just because there is sort of a... I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say that there was a kind of chafing at the bit of... just the frustration of, you know, what you have to do to be taken seriously as a mind, as a person beyond being a carpool driver, gift facilitator, you know, all these things. But I mean, so on the one hand, people tell me that this period of time will go fast and, you know, savor every moment. It doesn't seem particularly fast from over here. And not only that, but I seem to have artificially prolonged it, having, you know, a 14-year-old on one end and a 2-year-old on the other. But I also think that there is, and it's something that I'm formulating in my sleep-deprived state, is this idea that, you know, it seems like everywhere in the work world, whether you're in politics or you're in a kitchen or what have you, it seems like people really don't know how to be good and kind people. And I really can't get over the whole idea that all these people, once Mario Batali, the news broke, I guess, to the world at large yesterday. But apparently all these people on, for example, my Facebook feed, everybody knew that. okay, well, everybody knew that and just took it as this is how it is. So I feel like at the parenting level, you're really in the trenches of working avidly to try to create people who take responsibility for their actions, who respect other people. It's really, and it's a really, really hard job. And I'm not comparing it to, you know, people who build highways, people who
you should
code.
Yeah, why? I mean,
coding is for monkeys. It's the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah, even Liel
can
code.
Literally train animals.
Try to code 8
job.
Presents for 6 kids.
That's right.
Right, code that. But I think that there. I mean, clearly there's a lot of work to be done, and even more so in a point where, you know, sadly my 4 youngest children will have no recollection of the first president of their recollection will be. An interesting person. Yeah. So especially then when that, you know, when...
So what do you want to get back out there and do? I mean, you're still writing. You write for Kveller.
I am still writing.
And you know, it's not that long ago you were on the Today Show talking about one of the pieces on the Today Show with Mr. Lauer.
With Mr. Lauer.
Mr. Lauer talking about a good interview, an interview he didn't fall asleep for or... I hope transgress
well,
any boundaries.
I actually told
with.
Him before, when we sat down, we're sitting on the couch and, you know... There was no impropriety whatsoever, but we were sitting on the couch and he was just looking over his notes and I was sitting there, you know, actually newly pregnant and not trying not to throw up and become some sort of meme. and so I sat there and I just patted his arm and I said, you know, I know that you must be nervous about going up in front of millions of people. I just want you to know, just be relaxed and normal. You're going to be great. And he looked at me like, and then we went on the air. And then afterwards, he was like, that was actually really funny. And I said, thank you for validating me, Matt.
You were talking,
I appreciate
you, Matt Lauer.
Yes,
you were talking about no rescue parenting, letting
no
your kids.
Rescue
letting
parenting.
Your kids
let them flounder.
Flounder. But so what would you get back out there? And if, let's say your kids were all in college tomorrow.
Wow.
Would you go back to journalism for a place like the Jerusalem Post? Are you going to write the parenting book that we all know you have in you?
I think there's definitely a parenting book that needs to be extracted in some way, shape, or form.
With forceps.
But I feel such profound. I take great comfort in knowing that I'm not alone. Such profound frustration with the way things are, capital T, capital W. I mean, in this country, you know, there are times when I thought, like, could I run for something? You know, would that be like, where would I be best? Would it be best to run for the Board of Ed and deal with, you know, micro level frustrations on a daily basis? Would it be best to? But I think actually that writing seems to be the place where you have the most individual agency. Comparatively, you're less beholden to anyone except trying to figure out things for yourself and discussing ideas with people, which has always been something that appeals to me.
But so. Hold on, I really kind of want to get back to it because this is a feeling that I have, you know, very deeply, and I know conversations such as these could get, you know, like deeply gendered. But I actually do think that because everything is so completely broken, I have a very strong sense. I mean, personally, emotionally, that just I don't want to call it retreating because it, you know, signifies some sort of defeat, but just being. Concentrating on being a parent is the most, you know, urgent thing right now. And this is something that I deeply want to do. And in fact, hope I will be able to do at some point. And I do mean this as in the, I'm not going to play any of these stupid fucking games anymore because none of these industries that used to mean anything like journalism or politics do anymore. And clearly they're all run by, you know, morons and lechers. And so I just want to be with my children and I just want to make, you know, a better world through that difficult task of, you know, raising kind humans. What's wrong with that? Why are we holding that?
I think it's fabulous to hear a man say that.
You're so brave, Leo.
I'm so brave.
I'm stunning and brave.
Can I just say,
Caitlyn Jenner.
I have similar intuitions, as you know. At the same
time,
I'm
class mom for my kids, by the way.
I
insist on being called class mom.
At the same time, I also believe, I'm curious to hear what you think about this. I mean, I think children are more or less a genetic roll of the dice. Like, I think the effect we have on them is pretty limited and contingent. And we don't, I mean, I hope that all six of your kids and all four of mine and all two of yours and the future Butnick Cohens grow up to be, you know, sadiks, but two of them could, you know, someone could be an axe murderer and someone could be a pervert.
Which one is it, Mark?
I'm just like, right? I mean, we there is no formula. We don't know. There are wonderful people who are wonderful parents whose kids turn out poorly, however that can be taken.
Well, I also think it's so interesting because, I mean, obviously by sheer numbers, I've been thrown into this parenting discussion role, and yet, you know, whenever I'm addressed as a parenting expert, I say, well, I really think you should get back to me in like 20 years to see how this all shakes down. Like, I mean, I think I'm doing an okay job now, but really, what do I know? I mean, they're there. But what I do know is
this. Parenting expert Esther Trump said yesterday.
You know, I think you're right. I think that, you know, my sister likes to say nature or nurture, it's your fault. I do think that you do have an impact. I think it's an impact of sort of steering a tremendous battleship. You know, you may not appreciate the difference that a few inches to the left or right actually makes, and they may be going in their course or sinking due to things that are completely beyond anyone's control, including their own. I mean, there's a role of brain chemistry.
Absolutely.
And physicality and all these things that... Right. The genetic dice are thrown where they are.
Which I find to be a liberating thought. I mean, I really do. I find like, you know, it's like I once was talking to someone who was a Calvinist, and he said, you know, I don't know how people who don't believe in predestination get up in the morning because they think they can affect their salvation every day. They said, I believe it was all written in the stars before I ever got here. So I try to be the best person I can. But ultimately, I know
it doesn't matter
that, you know, I'm called to try, but I'm not, the answer is not.
That seems
my
like a little
fault.
Bit of a cop out, though.
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, but I get what he was
but
saying.
A liberating cop out.
I can't help but love my kids and be attentive to them. And it gives me tremendous joy to be the best parent I can be. But I'm liberated by the thought that it's not all on me. It's a lot of it's genetic and brain chemistry. And at a certain point, it's on them. And, you know.
Right. Right. But I think also, I also feel very. I feel very happy, obviously, in the aggregate with my choices. But also, I think to have so many kids, there are certain traits that I've started noticing are kind of many kid traits that I see and that I like. A kind of ability to roll with the punches a little bit more than you might be able to otherwise out of necessity. Even if your predisposition is toward anxiety, you just sort of realize, right. You know,
there's six of you.
Correct.
You
know? Right. Exactly. And
how much time are you going to get on the stage?
Right, and also that helps me a little bit as a parent, because one of the frustrations of being a parent of so many is that every night I go to bed knowing that I did not and could not give all the attention to each one of these kids that they wanted from me. That's an insurmountable mountain. It's just not possible. And so you can either be frustrated by that or try to do as much as you can within the context of that. But at the same token, there's an appreciation of that from these kids, the recognition that I'm not... I made it pretty clear, and this was, I guess, part of my overarching philosophy, is that when my son started doing Little League, I said, okay, well, you know, let me know two of your games or three that are particularly important to you, and I'll make sure to be at those. But I'm not, I mean, yeah. Most of the parents are there at every single game.
Hey, look, I'm not buying the season ticket. I'm going to come to like the playoffs.
Right. But it's just not possible, and it's just not fair. It's not fair that, you know, you choose to be in Little League and therefore, you know, X number of my evenings are spoken for, and therefore the person who needs help with their social studies or the person who needs to, you know, be taken to occupational therapy or whatever, like that person gets the short end of the stick because of your choice. It's just a perpetual balancing act. So,
amen.
I have a question about the dog and the Roomba.
Mm.
Was the Roomba like spreading the poop around?
Yes.
Is that the situation?
Yes.
Okay.
Like into floorboards and crevices. Oh. I mean, it was really.
This was a viral video. Mom fail. Like, look how my life is.
It was
become.
Right. It was something like this is the absolute low.
So, what present? Like, what do you want for Hanukkah?
Oh. I mean,
world peace.
Gin.
This is really it. I
the
mean, I came into
Doug
the city.
Jones victory.
I was, you know, sitting alone, not having to manipulate a stroller. I read articles uninterrupted. I actually, so the thing about podcasts is that I can very rarely listen because someone is coming over screaming at any point in time about, you know, anything from an insignificant thing too. Like, I think my eyeball is going to fall out. So, I mean, really, really, I guarded, you know, someone said to me, like, couldn't you call in? And I said, well, I could, but I won't. Yeah. It's really, I think that this sort of, I fiercely guarded this ability to extract. And, you know, one daughter came down with strep, and I said, best of luck. You have to take her to the pediatrician. Mm-hmm. You have to ask for the in-office test and the one that
you
they
send out.
You
said this to your husband?
I did.
He took the day off?
I said, farewell. Yes. Well, he can work from home also.
Oh,
so hopefully there's going to be a lot of, and I said, you can go nuts with the TV. Yeah. You know, she's sick.
Just Daniel Tiger all
the way. All the way.
100%.
Dinosaur Train.
Well, they're more into it. I mean, they found some show that is just almost repugnant in every way.
Which one?
It's called Shimmer and Shine.
Oh,
I don't know this one.
It's important Jewish values.
But anyway, so there's going to be a lot of Shimmer and Shine today, I think.
I wish you a lot of Shimmer and Shine for all of 57, 78.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, and you too.
We should all have more shimmer and shine in our lives.
If people were to go read one article of yours that you've written in your...
Or to start with one.
Or to start with one. What are you most proud of? What's your...
Well, I would say to start with one, and I'm not sure if this is necessarily the one of which I'm most proud, but I would say that I wrote a piece for Kfeller about, and Stephanie made me think about it, before he and I were married, he had just gotten divorced and he had gotten himself a dog. And so, and this dog was a rescue dog and it was, I don't know, I think it was, I used to, people would say, oh, what kind of dog is that? Because it had these tiger-like stripes on it. And it was obviously part pit. So I would say to people like, oh, he's part Yorkie and part Corgi. And people would just walk around like...
Shimmer and shine.
Right, shimmer and shine. Shimmer and shine. So, but I wrote a piece called Yard Site for a Dog that was about how I felt that, you know, so here...
Did you make him give up the dog?
No, absolutely not. The dog, so what happened was he got this dog. He and I met. I had these two boys at the time who were young. They were, when we got married, they were in kindergarten and first grade. So he had never had children before. And how this dog really prepared him for the idea, not only, you know, the obvious points of the feces, but beyond that, the idea of having to construct your life around caring for someone else. And the idea that it really sort of worked your heart muscles in a way that they hadn't been worked previously. And it was actually very sad because 2 months before we were going to get married, the dog was left with a dog sitter and he got hit by a car.
Oh my God.
And he died. Oh. My boys had been very excited about, like, they were getting like a stepdad and a dog.
I think you have to get your kids a dog.
That's the only thing you could do for Hanukkah.
Not for Hanukkah.
Jordana, will you stick around and do a mazel tov with us at the end
100%.
Of the show?
Jordana, you stay here as long as you want.
I will.
That's right.
I totally appreciate that.
Anytime you need to get out of Short Hills, you just tell them you're going to go be a guest on our podcast. We'll back you up.
Right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Jordana Horn-Gordon, everyone.
Thanks.
Mother knows best. Listen to your mother. It's a scary world out there. Mother knows best. One way or another, something will go wrong, I swear. Ruffians, thugs, poison ivy, quicksand, cannibals and snakes, the plague.
No!
Yes!
Also large bugs, men with pointy teeth, and stop no more, you'll just upset me.
Hey, little bit of Jim Nabel for you in this holiday season. We just gave you a clip of his old classic Holocaust Survivor Cutie Pie Beauty Pageant. I always get that title wrong, but he's written a new holiday classic. Jim Nabel, the Jubador, it's Nabel with a K, is back with Shalom for the Holidays.
Heroes are beasts, the choirs of yearning have been burned by their priests, and the late Charles Manson was finally released, but it's not too late for world peace. Shalom for the holiday, the Christmas trees sing. Shalom for the holiday. It's a peace offering to the scumbags and the sidekicks, to the rich and the poor, to the taxis they'll levy, to the bottomless floor. In the middle of the night, there's a knock on your door. It's Santa Claus dressed as Judge Roy Moore. Shalom for the holiday. La 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 la, shalom for the holidays. It's a peace offering. that bread that I baked yesterday morn. It came out of the oven like a baby gets born. Its pieces are pulled into halves, it is torn. It's a day or two old, but it's still warm. Shalom for the holidays. I know what to bring. Shalom for the holidays. It's a peace
was the Jubador, Jim Nabel with a K, with his musical partner in crime, Joshua Joy Kamensky, on piano and musical direction with Shalom for the Holidays. It's up at his website, jimnabel.com.
Mailbox, got a letter in the mailbox, got a letter in the mailbox, mailbox.
Some terrific letters this week. Dear Unorthodox, someone on the latest podcast said no one loves Christmas more than the Jews. I believe that
I said
was
that.
Ms. Butnick.
Stand by it.
Or words to that effect. Jesus Christ, speak for yourself. A month listening to Christmas music in public places does not generate any holiday cheer within this Jew. Keith Danish. What a name.
Danish.
Keith.
I get it.
What a name.
But to me, it's like so low stakes. Like
I have to say, I understand what you're saying. I mean, there is a way in which you know, if Lenny Bruce were talking about it, Christmas is Jewish.
I'm sorry, I can't get it.
But
I'm about to listen to Christmas music does not generate any cheer with this Jew. Signed, Rudolph Redo's Jingle Bells Santa Claus Cohen.
I sort of know what you were saying, Stephanie, but I never really liked because it was always so commercialized and Easter, I have a little more luck because it's
what?
Bunnies and eggs.
Okay, but Easter to me is so much more intense. Christmas has taken, the Christ is gone, guys,
that's right.
In America.
That's
like,
not
it's gone
Christmas has been won.
Hi, Stephanie, Mark, and Liel. I've been listening to the podcast for a while per my dad's suggestion. Your conversation with Kristen Meinzer inspired me to write in. She asked you about how Jewish kids manage not to spoil Santa for everyone else. Well, I was the only Jew in my very small town. I definitely knew that Santa was not real. And whatever Mark says, some of my classmates were quite intelligent, but still believed. I can tell you a couple reasons I didn't spoil it for them. One, as Stephanie said, I was definitely told not to by my parents. Two, I didn't want my classmates to hate me. When asked, and I was frequently, I just told my classmates that he didn't come to my house because we were Jewish. I love the idea they just make Santa into an anti-Semite, basically.
Right.
Also, regarding the Jappy conversation, Mark mentioned that young people didn't know what those words even mean. I'm 24 and I definitely know what it means. All the Jewish girls I've talked to about it are still pretty sensitive to it. Thanks for the entertainment and the education, Hannah Gottlieb.
I have to say, I love all like the feedback you're getting from people being like, kids can believe in Santa even if they're smart. Like people really were triggered by that. By you
really
being
triggered.
Like, what do you mean five-year-olds don't know that Santa's not real? All the five-year-olds I knew did.
I just want to also take this opportunity, first of all, to say, okay, my bad, fine. There are a lot of really intelligent kids out there who believe in the fat man coming down millions of chimneys in 8 hours. Fine. I didn't know them, but they're out there. The second is that Jappy conversation sent me, so a couple of two of our Facebook group members, it turns out, wrote college or master's theses on the question of the Jewish American princess in culture. One of them sent me her thesis and I was reading it. And a bunch of the footnotes were to these books that came out in the early 80s. One of them was called The Jap Handbook, which is like the preppy handbook, but it was for Japs. I just got my used copy from Amazon Used Books yesterday and I haven't read it yet, but it's in my backpack out there. Another bunch of footnotes were to this book called The Death of a Jewish American Princess, in quotes, right? Which is about this murder case in Scottsdale, Arizona in 1981, where a man named Steve Steinberg murdered his wife and got off by pleading temporary insanity because his wife was such a nagging Jap that she drove him insane. He stabbed her 26 times and was acquitted.
I feel like this is like the next like Making a Murderer.
I was about to say, no, this is the next like Adam Sandler comedy.
This book.
God. I'm sorry, I had to kill her because she
this
was a
book
nag.
By a Scottsdale Gentile lawyer named Shirley Frondorf, who just got obsessed with the case and what had been done, the way this woman had been murdered twice over because then she was murdered in the courtroom. This book is trashy and horrible and utterly compelling. It's the best read.
That's horrifying.
And it is absolutely horrifying. And in the early 80s, so, and one of the things I'm learning about this Jap conversation, we will come back to this. We're going to do a special episode or a live event or something. I'm obsessed. It's because one of the things I'm learning is that it really peaked in the late 70s and early 80s, and it was very vicious, and there was a lot of Jap graffiti at universities, and it was really, and the other thing was, and this is my little bit of, this is my Dvar Torah for the day, a lot of the confusion in our discussion of it is that today the Jap is an educated woman. Today the Jap is like, oh, what was your sorority at Penn or Brandeis or whatever, and then you went and became a lawyer or a doctor or whatever. But she's as educated as her husband. In the 70s, the stereotype was very much she got married. It was the girl who maybe she did a couple years of college, got her MRS, and then got married and just spent on the husband's credit card. She went from daddy's credit cards to the husband's, and it was a much more vile stereotype.
I have to say my mother has requested to be on the Jap episode to share her opinion, which is the opposite of mine. And also my sister wants to be on. They're like, we need to be on the Jap episode because we feel very strongly about this.
I think we should have, what's the plural noun for buttniks?
But Butnikim.
And two of them are at Kennebutnik right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, letter writers, thank you. You keep us on our toes. We hope to do the same for you. Write to us at unorthodox@tabletmag.com.
Our Gentile of the Week is Reza Aslan, a writer, producer, and scholar of religion. His latest book is God, A Human History, which came out last week. I have in my notes, which came out last night. I don't know what I was thinking about, but yeah. So
welcome.
They're both statements are wrong. It came out like actually a month ago.
did I say last week? I meant to write last month.
It's out. The point is it's out.
When is it out? Get
God,
it.
A Human History is out.
So what is a human history of God?
Well, the story is about how human beings, really from the very moment in which the very idea of God arose in our evolution, have tried to make sense of God by humanizing God, by implanting in God human emotions, human personalities, even a human body. All in an attempt to sort of make sense of this, you know, sort of inexpressible, utterly unhuman thing. And then obviously there's some kind of, you know, serious negative consequences to that kind of cognitive impulse.
What are the negative consequences?
Well, you know, I mean, if you're conceiving God as basically a divine reflection of yourself, then what you're doing is projecting upon God all of your own ideas and values and biases and bigotries, even your own politics. And so that more than anything else explains why we have, you know, so many religious conflicts in the world, why religion is used often to fuel wars and devastation or to excuse rank bigotries or occasionally even child molestation and pedophilia.
When?
So we hear.
Shocking.
I know. It's a surprise. But basically, this is what we're doing is that, you know, we're implanting in God everything that we love and we hate and then pretending that that's what God loves and God hates. And then, you know, creating this superhuman being with human emotions, human attributes, but without any human limitations. And that, you know, again, for obvious reasons, is very dangerous.
So you've been through a journey of your own, right? I mean, your parents are Muslim, yes? And
they were Muslim, yes.
They were Muslim. And you, in your teenage years, became an evangelical Christian. And then at some point you moved out of that. How do you define yourself religiously now?
I'm a Muslim. I practice the Sufi tradition within Islam. And Sufism is actually a huge part of kind of why I wanted to write this book. I mean, in many ways, this is the most personal book I've ever written. Most of the books that I write are about religion, religious history, religious figures, the rise of religious movements, or the intersection of religion and politics, or religion and violence. This is the first book that I've ever written that's about faith, about belief, where it comes from, how it arose, why it exists, what it does to people. And so in a way, I wanted this book to also reflect my own faith journey. Because as you can imagine, you know, I'm asked this question all the time, which is, how can it be that you study the religions of the world and yet still call yourself a person of faith, let alone a Muslim? And so in many ways, the book is not just a history of human spirituality. It's also in some ways a parallel of my own kind of spiritual journey from, as you say, a kind of cultural Muslim to an evangelical Christian to a Sufi.
And do you find that the tradition you're currently in that Sufi Islam has aspects of it that defeat that tendency toward anthropomorphism? Like, is there something about Sufism that you think helps you stay away from that tendency to think of God in our image?
Well, it's in many ways the entire point of Sufism, but really it's the entire point of all mystical movements within religions. You know, at the end of the book, I make this full-throated argument for pantheism, the idea that God is all and all is God. That is the foundation, of course, of Sufi beliefs. The Sufi is not interested in learning about God. The Sufi is interested in uniting with God. But that's a sentiment that exists in Judaism, of course. It exists in Christianity and all the Eastern religions. The idea of this, of God, not as a divine personality, but as the underlying force of the universe, as the universe itself, is, as I talk about in the book, an idea that goes back long before there were any such thing as religions. In fact, there's ample evidence to show that this is a belief that goes back to before there was even such a thing as Homo sapiens.
So we're people of the Old Testament, OT.
The OT,
and that,
yeah.
That God, if Hugh, the personified version of that God gets sort of a bad rap. He's vengeful. He's spiteful. Does he deserve that reputation, or have we just like humanized him too much?
Well, I don't mean to blow your minds, but there are two gods in the Old Testament, right? There are two completely separate and different gods. There's the God of Abraham, whose name is El or Elohim. El is a Canaanite deity, one that we know a lot about, one of the most famous, most well-known, most well-studied gods in religious history. And by the way, it makes sense that Abraham's God was a Canaanite god because Abraham spent his entire life in the land of Canaan. But El is a completely different god than Moses' God. Moses' God is Yahweh. A God that's kind of a new God, a God that, you know, we basically knew nothing about until he suddenly shows up in that dramatic scene in the Sinai desert. Yahweh is, as far as we know, a Midianite God. It's kind of one of the clans, the larger clans in Egypt, basically, which again makes sense since Moses was Egyptian. So when you look at the two gods in the Hebrew scriptures, what you see is one of them is really a mild fatherly deity. That's El. You know, the verses that you see sometimes where you see God as this kind of loving old man who sits on a throne and talks about forgiveness and brotherly love. That's El. But when you get into the Yahweh stuff, that's when you start hearing about God as a man of war. He is a blood-soaked God. His robes are dipped in the blood.
Yeah,
of
the good Reza, stuff.
I love how you're basically describing the plot of The Godfather.
I was just
here.
Thinking this is like a Marvel series.
The old guy, right. You know, goes away, and then the new one comes back from the war and says, I brought the heads of the five families here. It's amazing.
That's right. The story of monotheism, what we call monotheism, is the story of the very slow merging of those two gods in the Hebrew Bible. Abraham's God El, Moses' God Yahweh, slowly become one singular God that occasionally, believe it or not, the Bible actually refers to as Yahweh El.
I think we should go back to Assyrian demonology. I think we should go back to like Pazuzu and Lamashtu. and just like awesome demons who like you could tell what their job was.
Like if you were in a Ghostbusters movie, you're that you're our kind of deity.
We should tell you that Liel is wearing a shirt with a demigorgon on it.
That is
whatever that is.
Did your Reza, did your time in evangelical Christianity give you any insights, do you think, into what's happening with evangelicalism right now, where some of my friends who are evangelical simply can't believe that there are fellow evangelical Christians who are using theology to say we have to vote for Roy Moore, we have to vote for Donald Trump, you know, God uses God raises up men for the right time in the right place. I mean, do you watch this saying I know them?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, there's a lot of things that I can say to sort of explain the mentality of evangelical Christians, particularly white evangelical Christians. And I do think we need to make a distinction between the two, and I'll explain why in a moment here. But the core sort of idea about evangelical Christianity is the sense of siege, right? That you are engaged in a cosmic battle between good and evil. All of your actions on earth have a cosmic significance to them. In fact, not even your action. That you are basically a pawn that is being moved around a chessboard by God fighting against demonic forces. Everyone is against you. Everyone. This is why, you know, white evangelicals who basically own everything and run the government are routinely cited as the group that says that they are the most persecuted people in the world. I mean, that's what Mike Pence said. Right? He's a guy.
Well, they have to make all those wedding cakes.
Yeah, I mean, he's arguably like the second most powerful man in the world, and he's complaining about how people like him are, you know, constantly being persecuted and under siege. And that mentality starts to infect everything. And so when confronted with, you know, facts and reality, when told, hey, you are supporting a pedophile, the evangelical mind tends to immediately attack that I'm being assaulted here. My very sense of identity and who I am is under assault. And more importantly, because I am on the side of good, the side of God, then anyone who is not on my side is not just wrong, but anti-God, therefore evil. And so that mentality is what drives this, you know, sense of, you know, ridiculous righteousness that leads people to not just excuse Roy Moore's pedophilia and child molestation, but to see it as a reason to rally behind him. And again, one last thing, we're talking about white evangelicals here, right? I mean, I know that we're all trying to rack our brains, trying to figure out how it is that 81%, a record 81% of white evangelicals voted for a racist, sexist, lying, lecherous, narcissistic sociopath whose entire worldview makes a mockery of Christianity. But it's white evangelicals who voted for him. 67% of evangelicals of color, evangelicals who believe the exact same thing, but who just have a different skin tone, voted for Hillary Clinton. So let's not pretend that race doesn't play a huge role in this.
Right. Reza, you are obviously a man of many faiths, but you've never been a Jew, and the three of us are Jews. And I was wondering, do you have any questions about Judaism that this internationally recognized panel of experts could answer for you?
Well, just like, what's with the drinking of the Christian baby's blood? Like, what's that all about?
You're not supposed to ask
amazing.
About that.
Oh, I'm not supposed to.
Don't tell anyone.
Reza, listen, when you run the banks in Hollywood, you really need some heavy, heavy stuff to keep you going. It's a lot of
work. Manischewitz isn't going to cut it.
Yeah. Actually, I just wanted to say, I have three sons, 2 6-year-olds and 1 3-year-old. And one of my sons, Cyrus, has declared himself to be a Jew.
Is it because he wants 8 nights of presents?
No, you know, we went to High Holy Days and he was like, this is way better than church.
When you're ready, you send him to talk to us. Like, we would love to have him as a guest, as a Gentile of the Week. We will answer his questions about Judaism, okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Reza Aslan, thank you so much for being here, and happy Hanukkah to you and yours.
Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you.
And Merry Christmas.
Oh my, you just said it.
Sorry, happy holidays.
Happy holidays. That's right.
Bye, Reza. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Oh, sinner, do not stray from the straight and narrow way, for the Lord is surely watching what you do. If you approach the devil's den, turn round, don't enter in, lest the hand of the Almighty fall on you. He'll fuck you up.
He'll fuck you up.
Yes, God will fuck you up if you dare to disobey his stern command. He'll fuck you up.
He'll fuck you up.
Don't you know he'll fuck you up? So you better do some praying while you can.
So you know an Orthodox prides itself on basically being like the epicenter of the Jewish geography game?
Yeah.
And we have proven ourselves worthy of that designation because I don't know if you guys remember, but last week, Kristen Meinzer told us a story about her friend Tammy Cohen, and she was the Jewish girl in school, and it was the root of her question, how do Jewish kids not ruin the whole Santa thing for their Christian classmates? And so, you know, I think I said at the time, where is Tammy Cohen? Is she listening to this podcast? We have to find her. We found her.
It took a day.
First of all, someone emailed Kristen and said, you know, I used to work with someone named Tammy Cohen and we go to the same shul in Minneapolis. I'm going to ask if this is her or something like that. And then basically someone tweeted at Tammy Cohen saying, they mention a Tammy Cohen in this episode of Unorthodox. Is it you? And Tammy writes in and says, LOL. Yep, that totally is me. Hey, at Kristen Meinzer, how are ya? And then Kristen Meinzer writes back, oh my gosh, at Tammy Cohen, it's a miracle. Wasn't sure you would even remember me, old friend. And Tammy Cohen says, of course I remember you. I mean, sixth grade was a long time ago, but still, smiley face.
Well, so good. And they were in Gifted and Talented program together,
yeah,
as I recall.
And so now they're back in touch, and we found Tammy Cohen.
Now, if only someone could find Nimrod Weiselfish.
I think
for
we're
me.
Pretty close.
You know, I think we're close. Mazel tovs. Stephanie, have you a mazel tov this first night of Hanukkah?
I have two. The first is for Carrie Brody, a guest on the show. She's the founder of Emma's Torch, and she was featured in the New York Times just about the graduation program.
This is the Culinary Institute for Refugees.
Yeah, she was featured in the New York Times about talking about the graduation ceremony that had just happened. So snaps for her.
Carrie Brody.
And a big golden mazel tov to Rachel Brosnahan, who stars in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and she just got nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Actress in a Television Series, Musical, or Comedy.
Yeah.
And that show, I mean, love that show. Yeah.
She and Catherine Hahn both nominated for Best Portrayal of a Jew by a Gentile.
That should be a category. And the Oscar for Best Portrayal of a Jew by a Gentile.
That's
goes
what we're
going to
do Oscar season. We'll do our unorthodox Oscars.
That would be the only category.
The un-Oscars.
Liel.
My mazel tov is to Dr. Yoad Kadari from Ben-Gurion University. So Dr. Kadari developed an online platform, it's called a MOOC, a multi-something learning something course, that teaches Kabbalah. And guess where the students for this online Kabbalah course run out of Ben-Gurion University in Israel come from?
Any? The Upper West Side.
Iran, Tunisia, Syria, Indonesia, Saudi Arabia. This may bring peace to the Middle East. Everyone will get online together and study Kabbalah and listen to Madonna. And
yeah, I was going to say,
there will be peace and love.
There will be peace
That's
and love.
That's better than our like SoundCloud stats of who's listening to us. We do not have all those countries represented. So maybe they could like make us part of the
We should
the
cross
program.
Promote. We need an ad with them. Jordana Horn Gordon.
I would say a hearty mazel tov to the people behind Fingerlings. Are you aware of what fingerlings are?
No, and if it not, can either be incredibly sweet or incredibly dirty.
Dirty.
I'm interested.
Yeah. Right. So they are the Hanukkah apparent. They are this year's Hatchimal. If you are aware of what a Hatchimal is.
You are speaking,
I'm speaking
ancient Akkadian to me.
Totally.
What the heck are
so
you talking about?
So the Hatchimal was last year's toy and like total reason for existing for children, which I would add my children did not receive, which is an egg.
And they
egg
still
that,
exist.
They still exist. And yet again, fingerlings, yet again, they will not be receiving these. They're they're little monkey kind of creatures that cling to your fingers.
Those are called children.
correct. But apparently children want children, disturbingly enough. So they...
Roy,
and now
Roy
they're
Moore
sold out everywhere,
well,
and there are actually, they're such a hit that there are counterfeit fingerlings. Maybe they're tingerlings. I don't know what they are. But so mazel tov, because apparently you won Hanukkah fingerlings.
They wow. Hanukkah.
Great job.
I want some.
My mazel tov is to...
That's what you can get us, Mark. Get us fingerlings, please.
I'm going to do better than
be
that.
Able to do it.
You're better than that. My mazel tov is to our listener, one of the growing cadre of high school listeners.
Oh, nice.
Our
Start
influence.
Young.
Yeah, sorry. Julia Hizami, she wrote to us and said, we had an assignment in our class in high school that asked us to convey current politics in some creative way. And my partners and I, she was part of a group project of four. She said, we chose to write a song about our political situation and events to the tune of Dreidel, Dreidel, Dreidel. If you like it, I hope you will share it with your audience. Julia Hizami, we loved it. We are going to share with our audience. If people stay tuned for after the credits, the outro will be you and your friends doing a 2017 version, a Trump and Putin inflected version of Dreidel, Dreidel, Dreidel.
The song we never knew we always needed.
I think she should get extra credit
for this.
Yeah. Unorthodox is brought to you by Tablet Magazine, on the web at tabletmag.com. Write to us at unorthodox@tabletmag.com. Follow Stephanie on Instagram at sbutnik. Join our Facebook group. Our show is produced by Alyssa Goldstein and Shira Talushkin with help from Julia Frakes. Our artwork is by Esther Werdiger. Our show is edited by Noah Levinson. Our music is by Golem, online at golemrocks.com. Our mailbox theme is by Steve Barton. Rabbinic supervision this week by Yaakov Komisar. If you think your rabbi should offer rabbinic supervision, write to us. We recorded Argo Studios, which was not invited to the White House Hanukkah party, and we're proud to be part of the Panoply Network. Shalom, friends.
With our new president. He's trying to build a wall, but his wife's an immigrant. Oh,
Donald,
Donald, Donald, we love your racist views. And when I watch CNN, I know that it's fake news. Oh,
Putin,
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 we know you're Trump's best friend. He's going off to Russia, our money he will spend. Oh,
football,
football, football,
it's Trump's favorite sport. But when the KKK comes, you show them your support. Oh,
Kim Jong Un.
Trump wants to destroy you. And when he says that nuke, there's nothing we can do. Oh,
women,
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 you need to be on watch. Make sure you have a taser in case he grabs you by the